This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, the leader in offshore investing, connecting South Africa to opportunities worldwide. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Chris, that's quite a turnaround from being your favorite socialist to someone who you're now devoting quotes to. So, there we go. Rob, that was a heck of a thing that you said about Cyril going out and Patrice Motsepe potentially coming in. Let's assume it's correct. Let's assume that Patrice does accept and Patrice takes over from his brother-in-law. How would you read it?
On balance, I'd say it's very positive. You know, he's a business person, a legitimate business person. African Rainbow Minerals was Anglo-Vaal Mining, which my grandfather founded. So within it, it has all of those incredible businesses and assets. And even though mining has been a difficult one for Patrice, his investment in Sanlam has been a home run. He's also, and he needs credit for this, the first African to join the Giving Pledge, which was Bill Gates and Warren Buffett's initiative, where you give away a third of your wealth on your death. And he was the first person to sign that. And that's an incredible, it's incredible generosity and vision of that man. And I do believe in his heart, he believes in South Africa and he knows right from wrong. And he's very pro-West. He's Judeo-Christian, pro-West, business person. He's got all the right attributes. You know, he does like football, which is not my sport, soccer, but he's an investor in the Bulls, so he can't be all that bad. I think on balance, it would be very good, and it would follow the thesis that John believes in, and Franz Grenier has been espousing, that if the ANC changed direction, you know, the good ANC that would change direction could then team up in a meaningful way with the DA and some smaller parties and really create the right momentum in the right direction to fix this country.
Just to support that, and it's worth pulling out these little bits from other places in our Mining Web Weekly this week. And by the way, we've now launched Mining Web. If you're interested in mining, that's part of the BizNews premium offering. Peter Major said, he used the comparison of two companies, and he said, you've got Arm, Patrice's company, and Exxaro. He said, Exxaro is shocking. They have really just terribly managed. They've done everything wrong. Arm has been extremely well managed. And he said they both performed the same over 20 years, which was surprising to him. But the point that he made, there's a guy who knows mining backwards, and he says, Patrice's business, very well managed. So if you could bring a little bit of that to South Africa, wow, what a difference.
But also African Rainbow Capital is extremely well run
by
the two Johans. So Patrice, if you look at what Patrice has done, he's got a vision. He's followed it through. I mean, he speaks fluent English, Afrikaans, Zulu. I mean, he's I was going to say a polymath, but that's the wrong word, polyglot. And he gives excellent executives full rein to get on with the job. So if he applied that to government, you know, he would be maybe another non-executive chairman, a bit like Cyril, but Cyril's, you know, disconnected. You would expect Patrice to bring very good people in ministerial positions and let them get on with the job. Set the vision, let them get on. And that could be a good thing.
Donald Trump.
I think he's done an unbelievable job. I mean, his approval ratings are very low. But if you think of what he said prior to being elected, what he would do, he's done it all. How many politicians do that? He said he'd get rid of DEI. He's smashed DEI. He said he would close the border. He's closed the border. I mean, there were some 12,000 people. No, it's 50,000 people a day at one point crossing the border, illegals. It's closed. He's now trying to get rid of people. 11 million people got through the border because of the Democrats illegally. He has inflation is down. You saw that yesterday. Inflation is down. Everybody said the economy is going to collapse. Hasn't collapsed. It's ticking along. They said the stock market would collapse. Remember that? Stock market's at all-time highs. You know, he said a lot of things. He's done almost all of them. What hasn't he not achieved? An end to the Russia-Ukraine war, but it's not without trying. But he resolved the issue in the DRC. He stopped India and Pakistan getting into a terrible war. He flattened Iran, which is a good thing.
So you're not changing your mind on?
No, I think he's done an incredible job.
What about you touched on the Western Cape. What about Cape Independence? Your closest political friend, I suppose you could call him, is Gayton McKenzie. If Gayton McKenzie
and Helen.
And Helen. Both. And Helen, okay.
They both take my calls, which is unusual these days.
So both of them are opponents of Cape Independence. You, however, have expressed an idea that the Western Cape could be a sensational country if it were independent on its own. Are you following that approach, or can you do an Ashore on those two and perhaps open their eyes to your way of thinking?
So it's not impossible, it's improbable. But certain things have happened recently which, you know, would give the Cape Exiteers some confidence they could accelerate the process, and that is coming from America. A lot of the MAGA crowd have bought into the idea that the Western Cape are friends of America, are friends of the West. And there's a lot of discussion going on, which Corne Mulder explained, where America imposing 30% sanctions on South Africa could have much lower sanctions or none with the Western Cape. There's discussion that maybe once Brent Bazell is confirmed, and it looks like it's going to happen relatively quickly now. That was amazing to hear that last night. And that Corne's in touch with them every day. I was very impressed. That the America could move its embassy from Pretoria to Cape Town. And that America and other countries in the West could work with the Western Cape, with the DA, with other players like Gayton, who are prominent in the Western Cape, to form powerful alliances with the Western Cape and benefit their friends. And, you know, Magnus also said that this is the potentially one of the fastest growing economies in the world, emerging markets in the world, the Western Cape. The likelihood of Cape Exit happening is very, very low. What is more likely is some sort of asymmetric federalization where certain provinces, metros, municipalities have a greater devolution of power, and others that are more desperate, more needy, or badly run are more connected to the unitary state, to Pretoria. And I could see, instead of a broad-based federalization or retaining all control up in Pretoria, I could see an asymmetric approach taking place. So the Western Cape has a good credit rating, is well run, and could easily run its own railways, its police, and take a huge amount of power from Pretoria, whereas other provinces like the Northwest would need all the help it can get from Pretoria.
So what if you set your sights just a little lower, and instead of being running South Africa for 100 days, you ran the Western Cape for 100 days? What would you implement there that could put the province not on an independence trajectory? Because as you've explained, that won't be that easy. But, you know, that old story of do it and ask for forgiveness later.
Well, I'd want the USS Nimitz in Simonstown on day one, because then no one would mess with us. I really would. I'd basically give a long-term lease of Simonstown to the US. And that would shore up our security. I would then take immediate control of the other ports, Saldanha, the airports. And I would bring huge investment that is being offered by America. I mean, France Grenier can tell you the deal that's on the table into the Western Cape. It would boom. I mean, the biggest challenge would be people pouring across the Western Cape borders into the Western Cape for opportunity. You'd have the whole of Africa wanting to come down here. But the Western Cape would take off like a rocket. I'd peg the new currency of the Western Cape to the dollar. I'd dollarize the country very quickly. And I'd set up a Bitcoin reserve on day one.
Well, if Patrice can become the president of the country, maybe Rob Herself should be running for premier of the Western Cape. Stephen Kellaway asks, thank you for your efforts. How can we help you or get your message out to fellow South Africans?
Wow, thank you very much. So Nick French and I and Gareth Cliff and a whole lot of other people have set up the Truths Report, which is a series of podcasters that are speaking truth to power. And it'd be great if you could help get the Truths Report buzzing along, subscribe, tick the box, things like that. I know I was meant to mention, what was I meant to mention? Oh, yeah, before I forget, on AI, I would really, as Stafford has asked everyone here, to please take Bitcoin seriously and study it and learn it. He said it was irresponsible of all of you not to understand it, which I think is kind of right. But also, I've learned through Gerrit Steenkamp sitting here how to use AI, and it's quite extraordinary how few people actually get it, actually how to even use AI. It's easier than you think. You know, I was looking at Robben Island and the commercialization of it, and I put into this prompt in AI, so I've gone a bit off piece here. I put into this prompt, what ferries, should I consider buying to transport people from the Cape Town docks to Robben Island, hop on, hop off, regardless of the weather, the current, the tides, etc. Okay? And within 5 minutes, it came back with a full report recommending two types of ferries, a bigger one and two smaller ones, where in the docks they should go from, the exact operating cost, how to run them, what it would cost, how much would it cost to buy them, and from whom in 5 minutes. I had a whole business plan done on transport between Cape Town and Robben Island in minutes. I mean, it is extraordinary. And I used this, I don't use Grok and ChatGPT, Gerrit uses them all. Manus, Manus. It's so easy to use. And maybe Gerrit, you can put a link to Manus on the group and just ask it every question. In fact, funnily enough, over the 2 days of this extraordinary conference, Gerrit was sending me questions I should ask each of the speakers based on AI. So you'd ask the AI, what questions should we ask Stafford Marzi, the toughest questions about Bitcoin? And so some of my questions had actually just come from AI. That wasn't me. Okay. I have an admission.
And yeah, we were so impressed.
I know. Sorry about that.
Can I just give my 5 cents worth there? The pioneers of AI are the guys from DeepMind, Demis Hassabis, who won the Nobel Prize, one of the youngest ever persons to win the Nobel Prize, who was then, DeepMind was then acquired by Google in 2013, 2014, and Google's had it for over a decade. Having been a pioneer of the internet, I know there were a lot of brands around, as they are in AI right now. My suggestion is go with Gemini. We go with Gemini. We think it's the best.
Gemini are superb. My wife uses Gemini.
Demis is, he's like you're talking, here's the guy who's won the Nobel Prize, who's built this thing, and now you've got lots of wannabes, but they're better marketers.
Can I tell a quick
story? They're not good marketers at
incredible
Google.
Business story. I'll tell it quickly. There is a 16-year-old girl in Cape Town, I'm not going to give the name, who is a very good surfer. And she said to her dad one day, she said, I'm quite little and I really struggle carrying my surfboard, from the car down to the beach. And her dad said, why don't you ask AI if there's a solution? She put the question into AI. It came up with a whole idea of a sling, told her exactly how to make it, where to manufacture it, the cost of manufacturing, where to put the logo, what the logo should be. And she went to Billabong and has sold the international rights to Billabong for the product she hasn't yet made. So they're going to be teenage billionaires with no employees coming out of the woodwork very soon.
Yeah. Well, there are lots of AI stories. But let's carry on to the questions for Mr. Hersov. And Rene asks, I should have asked AI to assist us here. But Stuart's question, as we heard today, American society seems to be so divided. With the assassination of Charlie Kirk yesterday, I'm sorry we didn't mention that. And maybe you can give us some insight into that. The outspoken center-right media commentator, are you concerned that our outspoken media in South Africa could be threatened to be kept quiet?
We are threatened already. I get a lot of threats.
Well, yeah. But that's not because of your media. That's because of you.
Correct. No, that's correct. No, a lot of the more outspoken podcasters, politicians get threatened. But the people who are really under threat in this country that need to be protected are the whistleblowers, because they do it from their heart. There's no upside. They're doing it because they believe in this country, in good. And they're the ones being targeted and assassinated and knocked off. They need more protection. We need to stand behind them. And with a very kind request, how can you help? Help whistleblowers. Help people that are being targeted. That's how we can do it, because they are the true heroes.
Bo van Niekerk, that's all you have to do. Go and look him up. Have a look. He was assassinated last week, the son of a professor. He was a liquidator. Barry Sargeant, for 20 years ago at MoneyWeb, was writing about how the liquidations industry here is rotten to the core. Thank you, ANC.
Charlie Kirk, 31 years old, shot yesterday at the University of Utah, dead. And he was one of the absolute pioneers of going into a crowd and listening to people and debating them. He was the ultimate proponent of free speech. You know, yes, he was center-right. Yes, he was a big supporter of Trump. Yes, he was a believer in free speech, and he got killed for it. So, chapeau, and to his poor young wife and young kids. It's an absolute tragedy.
What was that, John? You said, question for Rob. With Rob on the stage, who's going to ask all the questions?
AI.
Hans Mutter asks, is there a possibility for BizNews to initiate a dialogue between the ANC and the DA to facilitate a transition good for South Africa and keep the Zuma camp out? Hans, I'll tell you something. At MoneyWeb, we had something called the Ibantla. It was a high-level engagement. It was a supper club that met four times a year and went away for a long weekend. It was by invitation only, and politicians, Zuma was there twice, top business people, business leaders, and people from within politics. Tito was a regular visitor, Trevor Manuel, the late Pravin Gordhan, etc. The engagement that happened there was quite extraordinary when people get into a relaxed atmosphere. I think we're probably going to resuscitate it from what we've heard here. So let's see. Let's see if we can get the Ibantla going again. We had great support from the business. Everyone just paid their own way. It wasn't a sponsored. In fact, there was a sponsor towards the end, and it collapsed as a result, but I had already left by then. So why is Cyril Ramaphosa unable to show any leadership or make anything positive happen for all South Africans other than announcing and launching expensive and ineffective commissions, reviews, dialogues, and committees? And this is from Gerard Steenkamp, who you may know.
Maybe it's AI. So Frans Cronier gave a very comprehensive reason why Cyril is so weak, that he's never really earned his spurs in any position he's ever held on the way. He's never been a leader. He's never been a decision maker. He's never been an investor. He's never been a businessman. He's never been a CEO. He's like a nothing. He's been promoted above his station all the way.
So how did he make $6.5 billion?
But he was given it, handed it on a plate. He's the ultimate beneficiary of BEE and the ultimate beneficiary of the ANC. But let me give you my reason. So I accept France is correct. That's the character of the man. But to answer the question of why he can't do anything, is he is compromised. He is as bad a gangster. He has done as many illegal things as all of the other ministers and cronies and elites around him. And they know it. He's got everything on them, and they've got everything on him. Parla parla. Do you really believe it was from selling buffalo? No one does. No one. There are photographs of Cyril in compromising positions. I'm making this up. They've got so much on the guy that he can't move. He can't fire anyone because they go, you fire me, I'll release the pictures. He's compromised as badly as everyone else. He's done as much illegal, immoral, you know, disgraceful things as any of his colleagues. And they know it all about each other. And, you know, I heard a story about Brian Molefe. Remember, Brian Molefe was actually a decent executive at Transnet. I think he was, wasn't he?
No, Transnet, he started stealing.
Where was he?
Before that, he was at the PRC.
Okay, so Brian Molefe had potential. And here's how the hypothetical story goes. I'll actually tell you who told me, because he's dead, Mark Wilcox. Mark Wilcox was an extraordinarily intelligent, dynamic human being, should have been a stand-up comedian, but probably erred on the bad side on most deals. And he worked with Tokyo Sexwale, built up his business. And he said to me that Brian Molefe went to see Jacob Zuma at Zuma's request. And Zuma said, and this is a story told to me by someone, how true is it? I don't know. And Zuma said, we've tried to bribe you. It hasn't worked. We've tried to compromise you. It hasn't worked. But here are some photographs. You now work for us. And that's how they do it. Everybody's implicated. Everybody's compromised. No one can do anything against anyone else. When the ship goes down, they all go down.
And Patrice, is he not compromised?
No, because as a young man, he's my age. As a young man, I mean, when did he take over Anglovaal Mining? In the 90s?
Towards the end of the 90s, he bought, I remember interviewing Patrice. Who was Patrice? He was a young lawyer who just bought the Anglo-American deep level mines at the bottom of the gold market. When the gold price was about $260, he came into our studio in the dungeon at the SABC. He was a nobody. Yep. Nobody knew him. And look at how he's risen from there.
So he's a lawyer and businessman. And does spend most of his time overseas. So he's not in the loops of all these back corridor dodgy deals. He's related to everyone. He's connected to everyone. He's friends and he knows them. But I don't think he's compromised.
Jacques' question is, Prince Moshele stated the DA will only get about 25% in the 2029 national elections. Do you agree? What must the DA do to win 35% plus?
I don't think they should bother. I honestly think that they've done an incredible job being at 20 to 25%. When you look at all the coalition governments around the world, the anchor partner is usually 15 to 20%. So to have a 20 to 25% anchor partner of a coalition government is a very good position. And I think the DA would make a big mistake trying to lower their standards, broaden their reach. You know, I do think John Steenhuisen has done a very good job, but I think it's time for a fresh new leader for the DA, and I think that's coming. I think Helen going to Johannesburg is an unbelievable move, and we need her to win. We need her to win to become mayor, because the DA will do some very smart, quick wins to show everyone in the country the DA is not going to bring back apartheid. The DA is not going to take away people's social grants, and the DA can deliver on the service level, because people are now upset about the service delivery. And if you tell the broader South African population, the ANC broke South African Airways, it's meaningless to them. They don't fly. If you tell them the ANC has broken our ports and our railways, it's meaningless to them, because this is some industrial story they're not interested in. But they notice no electricity, sewage on the streets, no water, potholes on the roads. It's those things and education falling apart. They know that that is a direct responsibility of the ANC, and the ANC has failed them. And that is why the ANC is collapsing, because they can't deliver at the basic level. And I know Cyril, and I've been told this, and I know it's true, does not want his reputation to have been the president who let the lights go out. So let's repeat after me. Cyril is...
Theodiago, would it make sense to integrate investment opportunities and value chains in SADC, like a SADC Business Council, Mineral Exchange, JSE?
Say that again.
SADC, Southern Africa, rather than just South Africa? Bring it all together? More common sense?
Look, here's the problem. The better we do, the more people are going to flow across the border into South Africa. We have a real problem with illegal immigrants in the country. And many of them, whom you know, are wonderful people making an effort to improve their lives and the lives of their families. But there's also a lot of criminality. There's a lot of criminality that has come in. There are a lot of people that are using up public services that shouldn't be, taking up seats in classrooms where local South Africans don't get them. And it's a real issue. We have to deal with that problem urgently. And as a benevolent dictator for 100 days, securing the border is in my first week. You've got to close the border. Do I sound like Trump? We've got to close the border, and we've got to make sure our borders are secure, and we cannot have illegal immigrants pouring through the border. So we need Zimbabwe. We need the government of Zimbabwe to collapse. We need Zimbabwe to start to turn around. And if South Africa turns around, I think the same thing will happen. Mnangagwa and his evil clowns will disappear in Zimbabwe, and that country will turn. And a lot of Zimbabweans will then want to go home. And the whole of the SADC region will benefit. Hichilema in Zambia is doing an incredibly good job. You know, I would posit to say that, you know, Namibia, Botswana in reasonable shape. And if Zimbabwe turns and South Africa begins to turn, the whole Southern African region can really become, in the medium term, a powerhouse.
Davi Root says, but the South African Reserve Bank was happy with Palapala. So is Lesetsha also compromised?
Absolutely.
Lesetsha's compromised.
Well, how could he... Do we really believe Palapala money stuffed in a sofa, not declared to the tax authorities, was simply an oversight and buying buffalo? I've heard wilder stories, but that's pretty wild. I think not compromised, but he knows when to look the other way. Wasn't worth a fight, in his view.
Yeah, as it maybe wasn't a hill to die on. Anthony Ribeiro asks, so getting Patrice in will help Cyril and co. to get off the hook? Blood thicker than water. What's your take on how arrests will and could take place thereafter?
It's not going to happen until, you know, you have the likes of the DA, PA, IFP in power, because they'll always be kick the can down the road. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission was an incredible, incredible institution to create compassion and peace and calm and allow the country to start again in the right direction. But it set a bad precedent, because the precedent it set is you can be forgiven for your sins. And I'm sure in the back of their minds, these gangsters are thinking, you know, we've stolen so much, but so many of us have stolen so much. How can they prosecute us all? And who was it? I think it was Prince Mashele said, you know, we at some point have to tackle the guys at the top and jail them, because we won't stop everyone in the middle and below from breaking and stealing until the top guys get jailed. And when can that happen? You know, how's Patrice going to send Cyril to jail? I don't see that happening.
Mkhwanazi, your call on that?
Good guy or bad guy? I asked someone very prominent, you know, could there ever be a coup in South Africa? Okay, I don't think they can, and I can give you my reasons. But I said, could there ever be a coup in South Africa? He said, highly unlikely. And then I said, if there was, who would drive the coup? And he said, Nkanasi, he said he ran the only successful military operation South African SANDF has had, and that was in Central Africa.
I think we're getting the wrong
guy.
Up.
Yeah, it was the guy that went to Iran.
Yeah, no. Mkhwanazi is the guy from KZN, the policeman.
Sorry, wrong guy.
Yeah.
Shall I finish my coup story?
Yeah, well, the guy who ran the coup, I did more investigation into that. He was the overlord, but there was a chap called Colonel Dixon who actually who won the battle. The general wasn't that involved. I discovered.
So he runs the special services in the military. They've got 1,000 soldiers that are very, very well trained.
Dixon.
No, the guy that went to Iran.
No, he's the head of the Defense Force.
He's the guy that this general told me is the only guy that could institute a coup.
Mkhwanazi from KZN.
Who did the reveal?
Yep.
Well, that's factional fighting in the police. I mean, the Defense Force has fallen apart. Police is falling apart. And now there's factional fighting between, you know, A and B. Is he a good guy? I have no idea. You know, Paul O'Sullivan is probably a good guy to believe, and he thinks he's a crook and a bad guy. But, you know, the crook bad guy runs deep in South Africa. If you start with Cyril and move your way down, you've got quite a few levels to go before you meet decent, good people that believe in the country. I mean, there are some good people in the ANC. Ramakgopa, I would posit, is a very good man doing a very good job despite the poison chalice he's been given.
John Endres has got a question this time. He says, does Rob think that the US MTN grand jury will reveal compromising information on Iran, ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa, and then what happens next?
What I believe is 100%. I think there's definitely no smoke without fire. No question. You know, ask Turkcell if they think bribes were given for MTN to win that contract. They think they're still suing MTN. There's no question MTN's got a real, real problem. And I'm sure there are logs somewhere in the system that will be discovered that will prove exactly what has happened. You know, everything's a little too obvious, you know, if you're looking from the outside. And isn't the most obvious answer the correct one? What's that? Occam's razor. I've done you Hanlon's razor. Occam's razor. I'm pretty convinced that MTN are linked to Iran, are linked to money, and maybe even Pala Pala. I mean, I think there's something's going to come out. But, you know, if you look at the budget that Mossad has and you multiply it by 20, that's the Americans. They know what's going on. They know way more than we do, and they've got the information. It's going to come out.
You've got to wonder if Mossad were really interested, if they just dug around a bit in Syria, because MTN had the contract in Syria and pulled out not long ago. So, and Syria was probably the most repressive regime on the planet. It'll be interesting to see if any of that stuff comes out in time.
The question I have, and it's either a coincidence or there's something there. The ICJ case that South Africa put against Israel happened almost seconds after October the 7th. I mean, it happened so quickly after October the 7th that either it had been prepared well in advance and then by chance October the 7th happened, which accelerated the relevance of what they were trying to do, or some people knew about it beforehand and put it in place to have it ready. The whole thing was a master plan. But there's a big question mark there over, you know, who knew in advance and the link to the ICJ case against Israel. Been interesting to find out who funded that thing.
Second devil thinking. Rene Kilner's question, second last one, Rob. Why are you so pro the Patriotic Alliance when they have shown that they make flip-flops look like an immovable object?
Gayton McKenzie is pro-property rights, pro-rule of law, Judeo-Christian, pro-Israel, pro-West. I mean, his policies are almost identical to the Democratic Alliance, Gayton McKenzie. And he's not afraid to stand up for what he believes in, despite the cost. He's also not afraid to take Julius Malema on face to face. I mean, they've had pitched battles in Parliament. And I know, I've known Gayton for four and a half years, as a number of other people here have. And he's a man of his word. And I asked Herman Mashaba at a BizNews conference, Herman, am I right or wrong about Gayton? And Herman said, you shake Gayton's hand, no matter what the cost, he sticks to what he's agreed to, which isn't the case with the DA. So, you know, will they ever get, I mean, I think it was Prince Chele said they won't ever get beyond 8%. Okay. I would have said 10%. So they're limited to be a somewhat regional. So Western Cape, part of the Eastern Cape, some metros, threat to the DA, certainly. But I think ultimately the Patriotic Alliance and Gayton are a natural ally for Democratic Alliance, IFP, FF+, that sort of grouping.
And perhaps a new leader at the Democratic Alliance might open the door. Last question from Mike Hankinson. He says, if Patrice is appointed, do you believe that he will follow the 100-day changes that have been talked about in the last day? Burn coal, remove BEE, etc., and will he be supported by Donald Trump?
Yes, I do, both. On that note, I'd like to do a round of applause for Alec Hogg and the BizNews team for an incredible conference.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst.